Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today. Welcome, women of strength. It is an amazing day to listen to another VBAC story. We have our friend Amy from Massachusetts coming your way sharing her VBAC story with you, or for you. I always say that with you, for you. And then we have one of our VBAC Link doulas, Desiree, with us as well. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for being with me today. We do have that review of the week, so I'm going to actually turn the time over to Desiree and read that.
Yeah, so the review of the week this week is provided by Ashley on the VBAC doula course, which I am very familiar with.
Yeah.
So excited to read this one. And Ashley says, TOLAC/VBACs should be treated just like any other birthing person, but there is certain preparation and information that needs to be offered to them, and your course covered that. The value is held in your careful recognition of how to best support our clients who are doing a TOLAC. I cannot praise you two enough for the fear release activity. Honestly, It is something I can apply to even myself before and after birth, and even in life in general. Thank you for that. It has already helped 3 of my VBAC clients.
Oh, that's amazing. That just gave me the chills. I love that. Fear release is so important. Women of Strength, if you are listening, we have that in our course because we truly believe in it. I think fear release in anything in life. I mean, we could just be scared to go in and take a test and do a fear release of that. But when it comes to birth specifically, I don't know if both of you would agree, but we've got to do some fear releases and let go and also process the past, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, I
would say it's good for everybody going into birth, but definitely like your VBAC or going for a TOLAC, because you take your birth experience, your previous birth experiences into the room with you. And if you haven't done the work, then you're just setting yourself up for roadblocks.
Yeah, it's so true. And I will even admit, I did fear releases and I did lots of processing and I still had little bouts of roadblocks in my VBAC after 2C section birth. And that was really hard, but I was so grateful for the knowledge of how to do that fear release and work through it in those moments in my labor. And because I had already done so much beforehand, the little roadblocks that were there, even though they were roadblocks, I was able to get through them so much faster and more efficient.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2C section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Miss Amy, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
Yes, we would love to turn the time over to you.
Okay, so I actually gave birth to my, I have 2 kids and I gave birth in 2 different states. So I actually, my C-section story is from when I lived in Massachusetts, and then I moved back to Minnesota, had my son, which was my VBAC, and now we're back in Massachusetts. So yeah, with my daughter, like I had hired a doula, I wanted to give birth at a birthing center that was outside of the hospital. but it was like connected to the hospital system, but it was more, you know, it's run by midwives, more holistic, kind of more what I was aiming for. And so, you know, just like with your first births, you have all the plans. And I think partly that is like some anxiety mitigation of like, if I feel like I have a plan, then maybe I kind of know what to expect. So I worked with a really amazing doula, and I did, you know, we didn't take a birthing class through the hospital. She kind of like did that education, and I was feeling like relatively prepared as much as you can, you know, with the first birth. And I had like a week's worth of prodromal labor, which I always am like very cautious. Like I always call it prodromal labor because I feel like the term false labor is so, it's so demoralizing when you're in it of like, this isn't real labor. And I'm like, no, it is. It just isn't progressing the way you want it to.
Well, but still your body working. And I think that's what a lot of the times we forget is it's not progressing the way we want it, but our body is still very much working and making progress behind the scenes, whether or not a number of centimeter or a number of effacement is reflecting, right? We're still doing work and making progress.
Yes, exactly. So, but my prodromal labor liked to happen only at night. And so I was like going off of like, you know, probably 3 or 4 nights of like really not sleeping through the night. And again, as a first time mom, I didn't really know, like I'm like up and like adrenaline and stuff because I don't really know what I'm experiencing 100%. So I did stop going to work. I think I was going to work up until the labor, and then I just stopped going to work like the last couple days because I was like, I'm not sleeping, you know, I'm stressed, I'm tired. And so I went into labor the night before my daughter's due date and kind of like felt the contractions getting a little bit stronger around 10:30, went to bed, kind of woke back up about 12:30, went, like told my husband, okay, like I think this is really actually happening now. So, you know, we kind of labored through the night. At like 4 a.m. I think I called my doula. We met up at the birth center. I was already 6 centimeters, which obviously I was so thrilled about that. And was like, wow, we're going to have this baby by mid-morning. Like, it's going to be great. And then they started checking her heartbeat. And like from the beginning, she was having a lot of D cells in her heart rate. And they, you know, kept monitoring it for like, I don't know, 20 minutes, which again, that wasn't really the plan that I was like going to be sitting in bed, like monitoring her heart rate the whole time. You know, I wanted to be like, oh, moving around, but they just couldn't get her heart rate to stabilize at that point. So they actually moved me over to the hospital like then. So they're actually like, they were across, it's a birth center, but they're across the street from the hospital. So they literally just put me into a wheelchair and like rolled me across the road. So that's kind of like when, you know, all of the interventions started. And then from there, I progressed, I think till about 8 centimeters, but like she was having those D cells like off and on the whole time. And then I think we ended up getting I got an epidural. I wasn't planning to, but I got an epidural around that time. I don't know what time of day this was, maybe noon, just because I was, you know, I'd been a while now and I was tired. And they were like, well, maybe if you rest a little bit, you know, we can kind of get her in a better position or something. And really what ended up happening is because of her D cells, they wanted me to be on continuous monitoring, which made it so I couldn't move around as much because the nurse didn't know how to apply like the wireless ones. So that was, I think like that happened, you know, so it was just like one thing after another. And my doula was great. She was really supportive. We did try a few different positions, but it was like every time I got in a position that felt good, they're like, oh no, we lost her heartbeat. We have to have you move again. So it was like, I think the process was frustrating. And then I did get the epidural and I got all the way to like 9.5 centimeters dilated. And then we just sort of stalled. So, and then of course, like around, I don't know, it was probably like around 5 o'clock, they were sort of like, you know, so this has been close to like 20 hours of labor. And they were like, yeah, I don't know. We could try a few more positions, but I think this is just going to keep happening. And now we're worried that she's going to start getting distressed. And so it wasn't really an emergency C-section at all. They were sort of like, you know, here's what we think. We'll give you a few minutes to talk about it with your husband and with your doula and see what you guys think. So it was hard. I was definitely like very discouraged and like frustrated by that. But at that point, it was also like, I just want her out. And like now that I've read, you know, and when I was listening to the VBAC, like listening to so many other stories where like we probably could have given it more time and all these different things. So anyway, see, they did a C-section and they actually found that her umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck, I think twice. And she was never like, she had never really descended into the birth canal, like fully, like she never really engaged in my pelvis. And like, part of me wonders, like, was it partly that, like she like had that umbilical cord and that wasn't, you know, that was going to be tough for her through the birth canal, or I don't really know, but you know, she was healthy. Everything was good. And I honestly didn't feel super like traumatized by that experience, but like, obviously wish it had gone a different way. So that was like my first birth. And then about 2 years later, my daughter was 2.5 when I got pregnant with my son. You know, it was like middle of pandemic. It was 2020. Is that when I got pregnant? Yeah, it's fall of 2020. And then I definitely started looking to VBAC, found your podcast, and was sort of like, I would like to really try for a vaginal birth this time around. And I think what was challenging about that, and as you're talking about like kind of going in with fear, is like, I felt like even though it was my second baby, I felt like I was going through the process like a first birth, because I never pushed. I never got to that point with my first with my daughter. And so I felt like I had that anxiety, almost like I was going into my first birth again. So that was hard for me, I think, mentally. But we had moved to Minnesota at that point, so unfortunately I didn't get to like use the same doula that I had before. I found another doula, and I think she had a lot of knowledge, and I think she did a good job, but I think overall we just didn't connect as well, like emotionally. And honestly, I kind of realized that that was almost more important to me. I mean, obviously knowledgeable, like certified, that kind of stuff is good, but like not feeling like we were always connected. Like I struggled with that at times. And well, she was one.
Sorry, yeah, not to interrupt you. I was just say that can impact the way you're feeling and walking into any experience. And so that connection is really, really key.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm a therapist. That's my job. And so like, obviously I say that to my clients all the time about therapy too. And I never got to the point where I was like, oh, maybe I should look for somebody else. But I think like looking back, sometimes I wish maybe I had, but then like during the labor and stuff, I think she was great, but it was different than my first time. And so, yeah, I did a lot of research about, you know, I read a lot about spinning babies. My doula helped me with some of those exercises. It was like stuff I was aware of before, but like I didn't look into it as much. And then one of the things I was sort of curious around, because when I had my C-section, my OB was like, oh, well, you have I think she said, you have a flat pelvis. So like, you probably, it's going to be hard for you to ever like have a baby vaginally, is what she said to me. And my doula was sort of like, she basically was afterwards, she's like, well, you know, around pelvis shapes and stuff like that, like that's very like gray area. And that's generally speaking, like we don't really like subscribe to that because your pelvis is moving and it's not like a shape. But I was curious about that. And so I kind of looked into that through spinning babies and some of those other, you know, some of those other resources, and about how, you know, the baby's engaged in your pelvis and how does the baby engage in your pelvis to sort of like progress labor.
Different stages. The baby can be in I mean, we all have different shapes of pelvises, so the baby has to come in different positions, and sometimes that even means posterior. So sometimes we do all the things to avoid posterior babies, and then our babies still go in posterior, but that's actually because the way our pelvis is shaped, or the way, you know, it was that day, that our babies needed to get into that pelvis, that position. And sometimes they can kind of hang up until we find those positions that can help them navigate down.
Yes. And I mentioned that to my doula, and we both kind of like did some research on it, because I think that was part of the issue with my daughter too, is like there wasn't a consistent engagement. And even though, like, you know, my labor progressed for the most part, I was sort of wondering about that. So I also was, I can't remember when this exactly happened, but like, I think around 32 weeks, I started measuring big. And so of course my OB, who I would say is like, she was like VBAC tolerant. I wouldn't say she was supportive. I did like her quite a bit, but she was sort of like, okay, your baby is measuring big. And because of your history, you know, she goes through the whole, here's your percentage of like having a successful VBAC. And I was basically like, and I'm 5'9", you know, I'm a larger, you know, like I'm not a petite person. And so, and even if I had been, you know, I don't subscribe to that because of the different thing, you know, like listening to VBAC podcasts and stuff that you know, your body can birth a large baby. But also I wasn't as worried about it because I know that sometimes those projections are completely off. And so I was sort of like, you know, it was part of that process of like learning to respectfully disagree with a medical professional who I did have respect for and like did feel like they had some expertise, but to say like, we don't have to agree on everything for me to like work with you. And I think that was like a huge sort of like turning point for me. And I think just my life in general, like working with medical professionals, of like, I don't have to completely throw everything you say out the window, but I also don't have to agree with everything you say. And like, we can kind of respectfully disagree on that issue. So I was sort of like, respectfully, I'm not going to schedule a C-section at this point. And she was like, you know, she didn't pressure me at all. She was like, I understand, you know, let's move forward with the plan. And that's kind of what we did. You know, I think that was empowering. And then as we sort of moved closer to my due date, again, because he was big, which again, I was like not sure of at the time. I was like, I'm gonna go into labor early. So that was kind of like a mental block for me. And then as it gets closer and closer and closer to my due date, I'm like, I'm out, you know, like going out of my mind, like just losing patience. And I'm not a good patient waiting person as it is. And so, you know, I'm having prodromal labor for the whole week before my due date. And at that point, I actually did schedule a C-section for the following week because I was like, I needed an out date. And I think, and that was sort of like what it was in my mind of like, okay, well, if this goes on for another week, I have an out, you know, kind of a thing, even though that's not what I wanted. But I think honestly, mentally, it like took a weight off my shoulders, which is so, I think, counterintuitive to what you would think when everything in me was like working towards this VBAC. And then I was like, no, I think I actually, at one point, you know, a couple of days before he was born, like I needed that date, that second date in my mind somewhere.
Well, I yeah, think so. Go ahead, Desiree.
I was going to say, I think that actually makes a lot of sense. Like you say, it's counterintuitive, but I mean, you're right. We spend so much time and energy thinking about achieving our VBACs and having our babies. Sometimes having that like, well, even if I don't do all the things, I can still have my baby.
Yeah.
And then that relaxation happens. And that's when we see labor starting to take off for a lot of people.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely think that that was a piece of the puzzle. Yeah, and I think that was helpful.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
So yeah, so then I'm trying to think of how this went. Yeah, so I did some, like we were doing some spinning babies things. We did some of like sideline release all throughout the pregnancy. And then on June 4th, which was actually my son's due date, you know, having prodromal labor all week. And then I felt like there was a little bit more intensity in the contractions I was having that morning. So I sent my daughter off to her grandparents and was like, okay, I just need to focus today. Like I'm going to focus on like trying to get my body in gear. Right. And it wasn't that I was like in this mindset of like, I'm going to make myself go into labor today. It was just like this, I think, intuition around like I needed to be able to focus on what was going on. And so we kind of, you know, we had that plan that my daughter would go stay with her grandparents while I was in labor. And I was like, I think she just needs like, she's just going to go earlier than, you know, I maybe thought she would because I wasn't in like any kind of active labor. And then I had my doula come over at like 10 a.m. and we did some more like different exercises. I can't remember all the ones we did because what would happen is I would get, you know, I have contractions like 15 minutes apart, 15 minutes apart, and then they would just stop. And then that would be the end of it. And then the next day, same thing. Or they'd be like, you know, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 20 minutes, like nothing consistent. And so what we found was if I laid on my left side in the flying cowgirl position, like then my contractions were more intense and more consistent. And so it was, again, like this thing of like, in my mind, I was like, while I'm in active labor, I'm going to be like walking around and trying all the different positions and all this different stuff. And what I ended up doing is honestly just laying in bed and watching TV in that position almost all day. And so again, it's like this thing of like, that's not what, you know, I've heard or like is helpful or whatever, but I think that was just where he needed to be to kind of like engage in my pelvis at that stage. And then like every hour or so I'd get up, I would do curb walking. I would get, you know, just kind of like get out, walk around, kind of like be active. But like, it was way more laying down than I'd ever like sort of planned to be, or sort of, again, even you hear that's not how you get your body engaged in labor, but that was what worked for me. So that was kind of an interesting, again, kind of like release what you think is going to work for you and do what your body is telling you is working for you. But it was actually kind of nice. It was sort of relaxing. My daughter wasn't there. It was the summer. We just had like the air conditioning on in that room. My husband brings me like a, you know, like a bubble tea or whatever. And I was like, this is actually not so bad. Like, this is okay. And so like contractions were probably like 15, 10 minutes apart that whole day. And then in the evening, that's when it kind of ramped up and it got, I kind of turned towards active labor, and we called my doula again at like 8 p.m. and the contractions were like very intense. And I was sort of just like leaning on an exercise ball. You know, my husband was trying to do some counter pressure to kind of get me through it. And then she did. And again, this is something where I think this is where me and my, you know, my doula and I were not always on the same page, but I was explaining to her my contractions. You know, they're about a minute and a half long. They're, you know, I can't remember at that time, maybe 7 or 8 minutes apart. And the first thing she said was like something like, oh, well, that's not, that contraction isn't long enough to like get to basically progress you at all, or something like that. She said something about my labor process. And that was so discouraging because I feel like I had taken so long to get to that point that when she said that, I was like, oh, so all this was for nothing, you know? And I know that that's not what she meant, but it was just the way, like, I remember just feeling very discouraged by that comment. And so that was tough. And then she did the abdominal lift and tuck. And I do feel like that helped kind of get my son more into my pelvis and more engaged with my pelvis. Cause then from that point, contractions were like 2 minutes apart. They were very intense. And we ended up, I signaled, I was like, I'm ready to go to the hospital. You know, we had agreed to labor at home as long as possible, but I was like, I think this is the time. And again, my doula is sort of like, I think we should wait longer. And my contractions were like 2 minutes apart at that point. And I was like, I don't think we should, like, I want to go. And I'm glad we did, actually, because that ended up being the right time. But I remember us like rolling into the hospital parking lot at like 12:01 a.m., and I remember my husband saying, well, I guess we're not going to be having the baby on his due date, because my daughter was born on her due date. I was in active labor, like on my son's due date, and then we just missed it. So I remember being like, that's true. We're not going to make it, but that's okay. So yeah, we walk into the hospital, go through triage. My water breaks like while we're in triage. And of course they like bring out their little testing stick and they're like, we're going to make sure this is actually your water breaking. And I was like, okay, but this is, I've never wet myself during a pregnancy. Like, this is what it is. And then we go back in the labor and delivery room, and the doctor that's on call is not my doctor. And I find out later that like, this is the most sort of like anxious, not nice to work with OB in that like practice. And so that was tough. So, like, I could tell from the beginning, she was just like very brusque, like very, she didn't have great like bedside manner at all. She was like, you know, I see that he's measuring big. And so like, we're going to make sure that, like, she was really worried about shoulder dystocia. And I was very glad again that I had read up on that. And like, I was not concerned about that. And so she was like, they had big birthing tubs there, but they don't let you birth in them. They just let you like labor in them. So I was in there and like feeling like I wanted to push for a while. And she was like, and I remember I went to the bathroom at one point and she like comes in the room and she's like, you know, well, let's get you on the table. And I'm like, I'm just going to the bathroom. But she like, I don't know, thought that I was going to like try to have the baby without her or something. I don't know. Like, her whole vibe was just very anxious. And so that was kind of hard. Like, that was definitely discouraging. So, you know, I think at that point, I actually had asked for an epidural again. I always, like, both times I asked for an epidural at transition. And then once I'm through transition, I'm like, fine. And they didn't come in time. And then they checked me and I was already at 10 centimeters. So they were like, okay, it's time to push. We don't have time to do the epidural. And I'm like, okay, well, this is what it is. So that was okay. And then I pushed for about an hour on my back, which was, again, not my choice. But the OB was sort of like, no, I need to be able to see what's going on. Like, I don't want you in any other position. Because again, she was so like worried about him, shoulder dystocia and him being big. And then like halfway through pushing, she was like, okay, you could try on all fours. But by that point, I was so exhausted. I was like, I couldn't even imagine myself like getting on all fours at that point. So I was sort of like, well, that ship has sailed. So that was tough because I had planned the whole time to try to push at least for a while on all fours, because again, knowing about big babies and that can be a really good position for that, you know, but I just didn't feel like I could advocate for myself, or I don't know. I just, when I'm in, when both my births, when I get in labor, I kind of go very inward. And, you know, I think having a doula there was great, but both times, I don't think my doula was like super outwardly advocating. But again, maybe they were looking for a signal from me, and I just was sort of like in my own world. So it was okay though. And I pushed for an hour. He came out just fine, you know, and it was like that euphoric moment of like, oh my gosh, that just happened. Like, that was crazy. And I think having only pushed for an hour felt really great with my, you know, basically first vaginal birth, my first birth. And they take him out and they weigh him, and he is 10 pounds, 4 ounces. Yes. And it was so funny because they were like, the nurses were trying to guess, you know, they're like 9 pounds, or like, he's big, right? So yes, I felt great. And actually, it was funny. The next morning, my OB came in. She was on then. She comes in and she goes, well, he was big. And I was like, and I did get him out. So like, we were both right. And we were able to like laugh about that.
I love that you said that. Like, hey, like I was right too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And I felt like, you know, it was a good ending. Like, I felt like she was like, yep, you're right, you did. So, and I did tear. I had two second degree tears, which again, maybe not as bad as I would have expected with a baby that size, but it was no fun. And I think that's the other thing that I talk about often is like, either way, with the C-section or with that kind of a birth, I feel like it took me about 2 weeks to be able to like feel like I could even like walk normally. I think the difference with the vaginal birth is that I do feel like I made improvements every day, where like I gradually got better, whereas with the C-section it was like really hard for 2 full weeks, and then it was like then I felt better. Like, you know, it was a different recovery. But I would say like, and I think other people have talked about this on here before, but like either way it can be a tough recovery.
For sure.
And you know, it's hard because like my sister had two vaginal births. And her second one, she's like up and walking. You know, we walked a mile when she was like 2 weeks postpartum. And I'm like, gosh, I was
Oh.
still like, I couldn't even walk down the block at 2 weeks postpartum after my son. And I think, you know, obviously not to compare yourself one or the other, but I think, you know, I had a big baby and there was some trauma down there, and like that takes time as well. But it was a great feeling, and I think that obviously it ended up really good. So yeah, that's my story.
Oh, well, I love it. Thank you for sharing it and congratulations. And I think that it's so hard to sometimes have providers that will kind of meet you in the middle. It sounds like you kind of both like went to the middle like along the way, you know? And I think in a real great world, in a, I don't know the right word, like I just wish that this would happen where providers would maybe meet us a little bit more, you know, to ours. But there are so many providers that won't even come in. And, you know, we talk about it all the time, like finding the right provider. And if the right provider is not for you, and if they're not willing to even budge at all and meet you in the middle or be part of the conversations where you're like, you were saying things and she's like, you know what? Okay, let's go back to the original plan then. You know, she said her piece, she said her suggestions. You were like, no, I don't feel comfortable with this. This is not what I want. And she was willing to be like, okay, all right, let's go back to that original plan. I mean, and look what would have happened if you weren't able to stand up and advocate for yourself and be like, actually, no. Like, you could have just, yeah, it could have been a very different outcome.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Desiree, do you have anything to share on that? Just like as a birth worker or as, you know, anything to share as far as tips goes when we've got situations like that where maybe it seems like it could get real combative, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the one, I just want to commend you, Amy, for like being able to voice your opinion in that way, because I think that that's really hard for a lot of us to stand up, you know, in spaces with, you know, doctors who we think they're in a position of authority. And yes, they have experience, but no one lives in your body. Like, no one has the lived experience of your body except you. And that makes you an equal expert in what's happening. And so I think it's great that providers, they bring advice and recommendations and, you know, they have a plan for what they want to see. But I think a truly great provider does meet you at least halfway. I mean, ideally they are, you're right, Megan, like they're coming a little bit more than halfway, but it, I mean, it's nice to hear that your provider was willing to listen to you and, you know, follow your plan and probably have hers in her back pocket as the, like, the fallback. But that's just great that you were able to advocate for yourself in that way. And it doesn't have to always be combative, right? It can be as simple as, thank you for your advice. I appreciate your expertise. This is what I'd like to try. And if it doesn't work, then we try something else.
Yeah. I think that was I think I was feeling anxious about that too. And like this big realization of like, I do, like, I like her. I trust her as a doctor. I feel like we're on the same page, but that doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything she says. It also doesn't mean that I have to like fire her and find a new provider. Like there's, again, there's some happy medium there. And I think, yeah. And you're right. Like, you know, I was taught that like doctors have this authority and like they know, like they go to years of schooling. Of course they do. But also like keeping in mind that their like worldview and perspective might be very different. And the lens that they're looking at this through is very different maybe than mine. And like, how do I sort of keep that in mind of like, they have this medical perspective of like, here's what they've seen. They've maybe seen the worst of the worst kind of cases, scenarios. And, but also to like keep in mind that, you know, there's this whole other kind of world or worldview around that. So that was helpful for me.
Yeah, that was definitely something that stood out to me with your submission or your like form. It was disagreeing with a provider doesn't mean you can't work with them. Like, and you said it in your story too. That is so, so true. It doesn't mean we can't work with them. And if it gets to a point where it's like, okay, there is no working with this. Like there is actually no working. Then we can make a different choice, right? We can change things up, find a different provider, look at our VBAC, like, you know, provider list and see if there's someone else. But if you can work with it and it's like everything's feeling good and there's just a couple things, but we're working together. That's so great. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, I just wanted to let Desiree share a couple tips. I love when we have our VBAC Link doulas come on because it's so fun to get different tips and different perspectives from other doulas around the world, right? And Desiree is in California with B_Earth_Mama. Is that?
And it's pronounced, my husband gives me a hard time about this all the time. No, because I guess nobody gets it, but it's Birth Mama.
Oh, I thought it was B Earth Mama. Okay,
that's what he says.
Mom, that makes so much sense. So much sense. So from Birth Mama, and she is in California. And remind us exactly where in California, because California is ginormous.
California is ginormous. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, so Northern California.
Okay, awesome. And you do birth and preparate, like birth education?
I do birth and education primarily.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And you do webinars and all the things, right?
I do webinars. I do online classes. I teach in-person classes. I'm getting ready to start a prenatal belly dance class that I think is going to be in person for now, but might go to virtual if there's some interest. So all things birth preparation, essentially. That's my niche.
Really, really cool. Awesome. And then I know there were a couple different topics that we were talking about. And one, I was like,
Ooh, breathing and active relaxing. Tell us all the things.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics. And I feel like it's one that a lot of people, it's like on the list, but it's like low on the list. Because you think about breathing, when, why do you need to practice breathing? You just naturally do it. But if you've been in labor, you know that when that intensity starts to pick up, breathing is the first thing that goes out the window. And so having a strong breathing practice, I think, is the first step to staying really calm and grounded in labor. But even beyond that, I think having a practice, it's about the process. And I think, especially for me in my VBAC journey, it sounds like, Amy, it was sort of like this with you, where like contractions start and then they stop and they start, and you're in this like waiting game. And is your body going to do the thing, or is it not going to do the thing? And what's wrong? I feel like having a practice to fall back on gives you a way to stay grounded and centered in your body as you're waiting for labor. And so it's kind of twofold: keeping your body nice and relaxed while you're actually working through labor, but giving yourself the time to be nourishing yourself in those like last precious days and weeks leading up to labor, I think is almost more important. And so something that I work with all of my clients on is having an established breathing practice. And it's not about the breathing technique, because there's so many different ones out there, right? There's, you know, the up breathing was my favorite, which is the breathe in for four, exhale for eight. There's box breathing, where you breathe in for four, hold for four, exhale for four, hold that for four counts. And some people, it's just simply breathing as slow and controlled as possible. I think it's about finding something that feels natural and intuitive to you that you can lean into. But it's about finding time and practicing, like really dropping into your body and dropping out of everything that's going on around you, and playing into your senses with that. And this is something that I like to talk about with my clients is like, it's like hacking your body, building muscle memory, because it's so hard to relax and stay calm when, you know, you're going through surges, the contractions are really building, and telling you to stay relaxed isn't really going to work. Nobody wants to hear that. But if you have this practice, and you've built in sensory cues. So I like to recommend people picking a birth scent, either an essential oil or a candle or a lotion, picking a song or a sound, could be even a meditation track, and setting aside even just 2 to 3 minutes every day to run through whatever your breathing technique is with your birth scent and your sound. And maybe you have something that you hold on to, and practice just actively relaxing every single part of your body with, like, through the process of breathing. When you get into labor, your body is going to remember that once you launch into this breathing routine and you put on your birth scent and you have your, you know, your sound or your meditation track playing, like, your body is naturally going to relax because you've told it that that's what this time is for. And I think it's a really special thing that we can do for ourselves, to give ourselves this time and this practice where we're just nourishing the deepest parts of us. And it's, of course, helpful for labor, but I think it's also helpful, a helpful practice to take into postpartum and into parenthood. And I can say I've been doing this for 5 years. My oldest daughter is 5 years old, and I still do it. Every day I have to run through my breathing practices. Yeah, I think it's especially important for VBAC mamas to have this type of self-care routine.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I love that so much. And it like you said, it just becomes intuitive. If we can practice it so much and just instill this into our lives, it just becomes intuitive in that labor journey, right? So there's going to be times where we were talking about roadblocks and stuff earlier, but like, those might come in, and breathing in itself is something that can get us through those things. And when you talked about the box breathing, like, I've done that before, and I have this weird thing when I do box, like the four, 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 I like, my body moves and I'm creating a square.
I do too. We don't have our cameras on, but I have to do the square.
Same. I do a square. So I like literally like draw a square with my whole body and my, you know, my torso and everything looks like a tree, like swaying, you know, in the wind. And I can just feel it. And I literally, the relaxation from head to toe just comes in. And like she said, there's not like any specific way. You don't have to like choose one way. You can use them all. You can use anything. Just really, really, really having active relaxation practice before you go into labor is so good. And I think it can help along the ways. And, you know, even when we have a provider that comes at us with like, hey, and we're like, okay, well, no, we're going to meet you in the middle, but like, it still might be in our head. And so we can like go breathe through that and be like, okay, she said this. I said this. This is what we're going to do. And it's like, you've just got that plan, you know, that whole conversation. And it's just like, you're breathing through that and you're processing that and you're going to apply it later on in labor. I don't know. I just love breath so much.
I do too. I think it's the most important tool that we have, that everybody has. It's like the most powerful tool that's available to us.
Well, we have to do it to live. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's intuitive. We have to do it. And we talk about intuition here and tuning into our intuition. And if we're really, really tuning into our intuition, that breathing is part of that. And then our minds and our bodies can respond. And yeah. Amy, did you ever do any breathing or anything like that? Or have you ever heard about any of the things we're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something I use in my therapy practice a lot.
I was wondering.
Yes, I work with college students primarily. And so, you know, this is a lot of time for some of them that they're facing some of this. But I love what you're saying, Desiree, about like practicing ahead of time, because that's what I'll say. They'll be like, oh my gosh, I had a panic attack. I tried your breathing thing. It didn't work. And I was like, you know, then it's sort of like, did you practice that ahead of time? Because when you're in crisis, it's hard to do it then, like, but if you practice it before and sort of again cued your body to that place, like that's where it's, I think, so useful. And it, you know, ironically, I think it's something that I didn't use a ton during my labor process as far as, you know, intentional breathing practices. And I, you know, I think I wish I had, because I think that would have been useful. But I think we did, you know, my doula would coach me about like some forms of like, you know, taking deep breaths and sort of like how you're breathing through some of the surges and stuff. So, but yeah, I love that. And again, I love the like practice it before you're in labor, because then it's easier to do while you're in labor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Such a powerful message. So, okay, one more time, Desiree, tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram. You can find me at B_earth_mama, pronounced birth mama. You can find me at my website, which is www.b-earth-mama. And that's primarily where I'm at.
Awesome. Well, go give her a follow, everybody, especially if you're in California and looking for a doula. And Amy, thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us today and sharing your amazing stories.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.